Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live today from the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls Studios. And joining us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital Studio in SDPB's Black Hills Space, we have Rick Kaler. He's a wealth advisor and financial therapist. And we're going to talk today with Rick about financial enabling because 60% of parents are providing some kind of financial support for their adult children. When is it okay to give? When is it being generous or helpful? And when is it enabling? And what are the results of that? Rick Kaler, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laurie. It's great to be back with you.
All right, let's start by defining this because 60% of people, you know, really have this happening in their lives. What's the definition of financial enabling?
I think it can be fairly simple. It's really the inability to say no when people continually ask for money.
That is pretty straightforward.
I think most parents can relate to that.
Right. So how common is it we have that data, but what are you seeing in your practice as far as, you know, how big of a problem is this for people?
I think it's a pretty common problem. As you said, 60% of parents engage in enabling, and this isn't with kids that are in college. This is with adult children that have graduated from college. So it is pretty pervasive, and it's something that I see in my practice a lot. I don't know if it's like the most common problem, but it certainly would have to be in the top five.
It's pretty usual. So how do we identify it as a problem? What are some of the questions that we need to start asking ourselves if that is our situation?
Well, I think there's a number of things that you can ask yourself. One would be, do I give money to others? And we're framing this as a parent-child, but
sure.
it can be anybody. And so do I give money even though I can't afford it? So that would be one question. Just having trouble saying no to any request for money from family and friends is another red flag. Mm. I think a big one that I have run into is that the person is sacrificing their own financial well-being for others. Mm. And you do see this a lot with parents.
All right, so one of the challenges is, what if it's not so much of a sacrifice for you? What if you have the money, but you have an adult child who is sort of financially dependent? Because it can be difficult to look at your portfolio and say, I'm doing quite well. My child needs something. How do I make the decision if something is good for them or is not helping them, even though it wouldn't hurt me?
Yeah, and a good question. So while it may not be hurting me, I can afford it. There's no problems with that. I'm not putting myself at risk. The question is, am I hurting the person to whom I'm giving?
Right.
And that can be harder to see sometimes.
Sure.
For a parent.
Because what I hear so often with people is this notion that, you know, economically times have changed so much. The things that our parents, didn't struggle with, you know, my generation is struggling with this next generation trying to figure out how to afford college. College didn't cost what it does now when I was coming up through college, certainly when my parents were of college age. And so there's a sense that we should be helping each other out. When do you look at someone else and say, this is hurting them? What are some of the signs that you think this enabling is actually doing damage to their financial independence?
You know, anytime something is chronic is a sign. And when I'm enabling and the other person is becoming dependent upon what I'm giving, that can really be stifling to them, stifling to their self-esteem, stifling to them developing and flexing their economic models and motivation. Recently, I talked with someone who's receiving a stipend from a trust. It's very unusual that I talk with somebody like this. And there is some concern that the that income may go away because the trust has drained down. And she said, you know, this might be the most motivation I've ever had in my life to go get a job. And we're talking about somebody who's in their 30s or 40s.
Wow.
And so that I can't tell you of how many kids that I've talked to who have been inheritors, who do have an income, that have suffered more negatively from that. And this is, right now I'm talking about parents who have passed on. I'm not talking about even parents who are alive. But it can kill the human spirit. Causing dependency is not a factor for helping a person thrive and step into themselves. Mm.
What are some of the reasons that you've seen that parents in particular or anybody who's giving to someone else, either beyond what's healthy for your own financial well-being, or that you can see the damage it's doing to the receiver? What are some of the reasons? It has to be really emotional to be asked, right?
Imagine that.
Yeah.
If you can afford it, it's nothing. It's not about the money, and it rarely is about the money. Mm-hmm. And I think you hit it. It's really more meeting the emotional need of that giver, of that parent. And I've worked with people that had a belief, a money script, that money equals love. And this is how I express my love to my child, is by giving them money. Yeah. And I think, too, and I think any parent can understand this, it's really difficult to watch our children struggle. And we know that we've struggled, and we probably can all point to times in our lives that struggles were the best thing that happened, where we learned some of our best life lessons. Nevertheless, that logic often doesn't make it to the heart.
Yeah.
And so it's so hard, especially if you have the money. I mean, if a parent doesn't have the money, it's a lot easier to say, no, honey, I can't help you.
Right. But that can be agonizing, too, because then there is that thought of, well, if I had the money, my child could have a better life. There's, when you don't have to think about, if I had it, would I give it?
Yep.
And you're just thinking, I don't have it, then that can bring its own wave of emotion saying, if I had done better financially,
totally,
then my child would be in a better spot and I wouldn't have to watch them suffer.
So you can beat yourself up for all the reasons that you don't have it, or you can beat yourself up if you have it and don't give it.
Parenting is just hard, isn't it?
it is difficult, and especially when it comes to money.
Yeah. If you have more than one children, it seems like it's fairly common, just from the people that I've talked to, that there might be one child in the group who is the asker, who says they need more, and that can really cause resentment and sort of... or encouraging the other siblings to sort of line up and say, well, if that's what we're doing, then so what do you see? What are you seeing in your practice with how this impacts families?
Yeah, that's a really important issue, is how do I treat all the other kids? Yeah. And even you have disparities in families where you'll have a couple of kids who are well off and one child who isn't. And sometimes the child that's the asker is the one who isn't well off. So how do I treat them? So far, if I had to take a one size fits all, which usually doesn't work, it's probably best to err on being equal with kids. Even when parents pass, sometimes it can be a point of contention because, well, mom and dad helped you and funded for this, and I didn't get anything for that. So there's a, we could spend a whole segment on ways to do that, creative ways to make things equal with kids. But it's definitely something to keep in mind, because there can be sibling resentment that comes through that.
Hmm. All right. So what, give us some sort of examples, some case studies, like what kind of examples can you give? How serious can it get, for one thing? Because many people are just on that edge, you know, they've given a few times and they're sort of worried. How bad can it get?
Well, it can get pretty bad. And I'm thinking of one client that was giving, I think it was probably in the neighborhood of $5,000 a month to an adult child, and had purchased a home for the child, and pretty much, you know, met every request for money. And this wasn't a person that had that money to give. I mean, the money was in the bank. But when you consider that it takes $1 million to generate $30,000 a year for the rest of your life when you're, say, 60, 65, and you're giving $60,000 a year, even if you have $2 million, that leaves nothing for yourself, or, obviously, you're digging into the principal.
Right.
And you're going to run out of money much sooner. And that's what we were seeing with this particular case, is mom was going to run out of money.
Hmm.
So it was putting herself at risk, even though a person that would look at her bank account would go, you've got it.
Yeah. Huh. So where do you begin, then, with a complicated case like that? What are some of the things to sort of change? Because these habits are ingrained. You've got someone who's living with an expected, an expected income now. How do you turn the ship around?
Well, that takes some time and engagement on everybody's part. But what we did was we did financial therapy, so we had both parent and child in the room. Sometimes we met with them individually, and most of the time together. And we showed the retirement projections to both and showed them, here's about the time you're going to run out of money. Mom kind of knew that, but the son was, that was kind of new information to him.
Hmm.
And so that, because his projection was, mom's got a lot of money. It's
right
there in the bank. So we involved them both in the financial planning. We identified their fears. You know, what were their money scripts? What were their beliefs around this? One of them was, for mom, was, well, I'll lose the relationship with my son if I stop giving him money. It'll all be over.
Which could happen.
It certainly could.
Right.
And it's usually a huge hook that keeps somebody.
Or the grandchildren. You won't see the grandchildren anymore if you don't keep this up.
Yep, totally.
Yeah.
I had another person that had three kids, and he was giving them the tune, and this is 15 years ago, $20,000 a month. And he was going to be out of money in a few years. And he and his wife were arguing about it for 6 years. And we did some intensive workshop with them. And within 3 months, they were able to cut that from $20,000 a month down to $3,000. And I remember he came back to my partner at that time, who was a psychologist I worked together with him. He says, you know, my kids have sure changed. They've all gone out and gotten jobs.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't think it was the kids that changed.
It can seem pretty obvious from the outside.
So with the folks I started telling you about, they were able to set a time. We set dates We scaled down the sustenance, you know, over in quarterly chunks. And within 9 months or so, the giving had stopped. And it's been a permanent fix for them.
All right. So what about those people who have children who are really in, you know, divorce situations, addiction situations, job loss that's beyond their control, mental health problems? They're, you know, we're kind of painting a picture when we say, you know, someone's getting $5,000 a month. My mind immediately thinks that they're just shopping, you know, with it, or that they just don't have a good concept of money at all. But what about parents who have kids who are really in trouble and they're afraid if they back off their support of what will happen, and what might happen would be, you know, someone's going to be on the street. Someone's not going to be able to afford their medication. Someone's not, you know, going to get custody of her children. Those sorts of big life-altering decisions. It can be very hard not to put your own financial well-being at risk when you see that happening to your children.
Yeah, so it's a number of things, but when you have a crisis and it's kind of clear this is a one-time event, that is not necessarily enabling. That may be just stepping in and giving somebody support, especially when the problem wasn't caused chronically or by chronic overspending or things like in the case of a job loss. So if it's pretty clear this is a one-time gift and the parent says, you know, I've got the money, I want to step in and help out. You know, that could be the perfect example of supporting one another or doing something that's very loving and very gracious. So that's important, and it's also important when the parent's doing that they're really clear: is this a gift or is this a loan?
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, this can, as simple as that sound, it can get really mushy to where maybe the parent expects some repayment, but not really. But if you were really a good kid, you would.
Yeah.
Or even the kid could get this money and expect to repay it when the parent is so clear this is a gift.
Right.
So I think that's really important to address.
When do you give a loan? And what? How do you sort of talk? What's some of the language that you would use, the parameters of loaning money to someone that you care about? It's a personal loan. It's not a, you know, a business transaction.
Mm-hmm. I think actually you make a loan when it is a business transaction. And by that I mean when it's something that they could go to a lender for and it makes sense and they're borrowing money to build a garage or something of that sort. And I see this happen a lot where they can go to the bank. I just had a client do this. The bank would loan them 3.09% was the rate, which was a pretty good rate. And dad said, well, you know, I'm not getting that on my CDs, so I'd love to make you the loan. And he made the loan. He got a mortgage signed, a note signed. It was recorded. Everything was done just in the way the bank would do. There is complete expectation on everybody's end that this is a loan. And the consequences of not paying the loan will be very clear. Where it gets mushy is when it is a personal loan, mm-hmm. and it's a loan that a bank would never make.
Sure.
You know, it's secured against nothing. That's when it's even more important to be clear and probably error on the side, this is a gift. Because if it's not a good business deal, then it probably shouldn't be a loan. So my advice is, if this isn't something a bank would make, make it a gift. Now, maybe the kid would say, you know, I fully intend to pay this back.
Right.
And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's great. I think it's important for the parent not to need repayment and not to expect repayment if it's a really bad loan.
Right. I want to talk for a minute to those people who are, you know, kind of listening to this conversation and recognizing themselves as having this problem. You know, maybe they're inspired or motivated by some of the steps and, you know, the language to use with your family members. But there can be an indication here, if you've had a problem for a long time, that financial therapy might be a really good path for you, no matter what age you are. Let's talk for a few minutes about how important it is, or it can be, to unpack some of those money scripts, to really, you know, to get at why do I feel so guilty about not giving money to my kids, for example? Why do I feel so resentful if my parents don't say yes when I ask them for money? This goes to a broader conversation about our overall relationship with money, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm smiling because it's kind of like saying, why is it important to breathe?
Right.
and that's the work in financial therapy, and that's why it's not a great soundbite. You know, it isn't, oh, three financial therapy sessions and boom, you know, you're cured. We've got to go to the base of the issue. You know, where did this spring up? And that can take some time. And sure, we've got some tools and things to kind of flesh out where maybe this would come from. And some folks can get there quicker than others. But it's so important to understand what are the messages. And as we've talked about before, we have 50 to 200 money scripts. These are beliefs about money that operate 24/7 that we take as being absolutely gospel, absolutely true. And the problem is none of them are true. None of them are false. None of them are 100% true or 100% false. So they're very confusing. They work in some cases, and other times they stop working. And so it takes some effort and some awareness and consciousness to start looking like, oh, man, you know, I thought that I had a money script that good parents would always give to their kids if they ask. It would be an unloving for me mm-hmm. not to give. When another part of that money script is the most loving thing you could do would be not to give to the child in this situation.
Yeah. And sometimes that would be true, too.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I was talking with my brother the other day, and we were unpacking some of the things that our father taught us about work. And we had two very different opinions of one sort of behavior that he taught us, and it was based on this: if you're always willing to work, you'll always eat, you'll always make money. And my brother found that to be a very nourishing sort of thing to learn. And I was pointing out that, you know, he was really under-earning when, you know, he would go and make $20 for this, you know, really big, this large amount of effort for a small amount of return. And I said, but also you could kind of say that maybe he could have asked for what he was worth in that job instead of just saying, this is going to buy your food for the day. You'll never go hungry, son, kind of thing. And it almost turned into an argument between the two of us because we weren't just talking about the money script. All of a sudden, we were talking about our dad, who is now gone. And we had to both step back and say, you know, no, we love this person very much. It's just there's more than one way to look at that behavior and kind of unpack what it means. And that maybe is why sometimes it's a good idea to have a financial therapist who can be a little neutral versus talking about it with your siblings, right?
You are so much fun to talk to. I mean, you know, you're doing your homework.
Yeah, I'm living this as we learn this.
Because you highlight perfectly that you can have a brother and a sister raised in the same family, same parents, same time, and they come out with absolutely different money scripts.
Yeah. For the same situation, yeah.
For the same mm-hmm. situation, yeah.
Yeah.
So I like to tell parents, you know, don't try to give your kids certain money scripts because it's not going to work.
Right. And both of us are right in some ways. I mean, but there was not yeah. You can't find an objective person to say she's right or he's right. It's both of those messages are in that moment where he, you know, he looks at his son and he said, you'll never go hungry if you're willing to do a day of labor. There's more than one thing happening in that moment. And I found it useful to just talk about everything that might be happening and how it's shaped our behavior in a variety of ways, not assessing a value on that day as, you know, he was right or he was wrong.
Exactly. I find there are usually at least three variations on every money script.
Yeah, I've got two more siblings. I should invite them all.
Oh, that would be a lot of fun.
The four of us will talk. Rick Kaler, we appreciate your time so much, and we always look forward to the next time. And again, you can find all our conversations at listen.sdpb.org. They're also on Rick Kaler's website. What is that website, Rick, that people can find them all in one spot too?
KalerFinancial.com.
All right.
KAHLER Financial.
And we'll put a link up on our website to that. And we'll talk to you next time. It's sort of great to go through in life and to have the conversations on the radio. Hey, thanks.
I enjoy it.